Hunter Hevelin has been acting as food resilience coordinator for the Hawaii Public Health Institute since the COVID-19 pandemic set in. A data-based food system planner, Hevelin studies the history of food crises in Hawaii. This past spring, he set out to map hunger and food resources across the state.
Initially, I was kind of pitching around like, okay, we'll do some modeling for who's vulnerable. We'll use unemployment. We'll use underlying sort of poverty baselines and SNAP use. There's a handful of organizations doing this. We can just get the data. And there are so many organizations out there providing a slew of different services. Food bag deliveries, it could be food boxes. There's Lanikila Pacific, for example, is looking to add sort of a CSA program onto their Meals on Wheels. So Meals on Wheels is another significant mechanism by which kupuna access food. Outer Islands, for example, and on Oahu as well. Churches have also sort of stepped up to help the distribution points. So Aloha Harvest, for example, may be getting food rescue, and then in some cases, that food gets redistributed out to a partner organization, say a church, you know, because they have probably a better finger on the pulse of their community to know who the most vulnerable groups are. And then, as you mentioned, there are these mass distributions, you know, an Aloha Stadium or something like that.
On that sort of offshoot topic, the connections between local farmers and consumers, how important is that? And do you feel like we have structures in place to expand that going forward?
The opportunity that's been recognized there for a century is still an opportunity. I can go online and order a whole bunch of local produce and meat and cheese and eggs, and it shows up at my door. And that's pretty spectacular. But I think it's also important to make sure that that type of service, particularly in these periods where leaving our homes is something we're not supposed to do, or there's a fair amount of risk embedded in it, right? So while connecting supply and demand is important, I think really trying to see how we can utilize some of these emergency food programming efforts to help build markets and build the industry. If every hospital, for example, bought only local produce, the add-on effects could be pretty good in terms of multipliers and so forth. For over a century, we've had public calls for decreasing food dependency, but it appears that just fiddling with these supply and demand levers aren't the only aspects we need to be paying attention to. And in particular, like, what are these structural barriers, land access, labor, and capital, for the primary barriers to increasing productivity that Albie and I found in a statewide study of farmers we did in 2018.
Food just appearing in our stores and at restaurants relies on a pretty complex web of interactions. How secure is it really?
What this highlights in part is the shift in thinking over broadly the 20th century in terms of how we think about food security and who we think is responsible for it. The right to food was enshrined somewhat in the 1948 Universal Declaration of Human Rights, mentioned around housing and other things. But the practice of it has largely shifted from being government role to being now in the private hands, right? So while we have this flurry of activity in terms of community feeding efforts, in most cases, it's not the city and county of Honolulu individual, you know, operating these programs, right? The nonprofit entities have really taken on this critical role. For example, the Salvation Army has the Memorandum of Understanding with the state for emergency feeding in the case of disasters.
And, really? Is this a good way? I mean, does this sound like it's going to get the job done?
Well, I bring it up in part because often I think, particularly when people think about disasters, it's the government will come save us, right? And I don't think the government thinks about it that way. Having done disaster response work, and part of my academic work is certainly also on that, and now consulting work in this period. An expression of this onus, right, is that, say, FEMA and HAIMA are recommend sort of a 3-day food supply, a 14-day food and water supply for people to have on hand. Most people don't have the storage space for 14 days of food and water, let alone the economic freeboard to just keep that on hand.
You painted this picture of these grassroots community organizations providing this food safety net thus far. This is kind of an emergency. It's like a rolling crisis.
Sure.
And
yeah.
I think everybody's expecting it to get worse. How sturdy are these grassroots organizations?
Well, the organizations are, I mean, they have risen to the task, right? And then many new ones have formed.
Basically, we might have a good food infrastructure, do you think?
I think we're getting closer to it. And there's, fortunately, I think this crisis in particular has highlighted the need for emergency food plans and the need for increased coordination.
You described how hunger right now is not a lack of food problem. It's a lack of access problem, which is a lack of money problem.
Yeah. This is a demand side crisis. And I will say that despite all of the years of study and work I've done in food systems that I've done in particular in sort of disaster fielding as it relates to food and agriculture, in all the scenarios I'd imagined, everyone going broke was not one of them. And that's, you know, essentially where we're at.
Hunter Hevelin, food systems planner with the Hawaii Health Institute. Hevelin concludes, people in Hawaii are dependent on federal aid, state aid should it be dispersed, and charity in this crisis.